This episode is brought to you by Podcast Assist, offering voiceovers, audio editing and mastering, transcriptions and show notes, episode summaries, and even hosting a podcast on a topic important to you. Visit facebook.com/podcastassist for more info on their flat $30 per hour rate.
I was thinking that we could do this better. We could do this better now.
I'm Chance Dorland, and this is the Des Moines FM Podcast. You can subscribe in the iTunes Store with Stitcher, Audioboom, Overcast, or your favorite podcasting app. And also, leave us a comment or let us know your opinion on this or any other topic by recording a voicemail message on our website, DesMoinesFM.com. November of 2018 will likely see Iowa's current Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, who is a Republican, of course, as the incumbent in the upcoming election, but who will be her Democratic challenger? Recently, a new name entered a growing list of possible contenders, and I'm joined now by BleedingHeartland.com's Laura Bellin to go over that growing list of Iowans who may oppose the GOP for the governorship in the fall of next year. Now, Laura, as is often the case when we have you on the podcast, you recently wrote on Bleeding Heartland, and in this case, you wrote that another face has been added to that growing, though now short, list of possible Democratic candidates for, once again, the race in 2018. And that person that we're talking about is, of course, State Representative Todd Pritchard. So let's start off with some background on this representative who you wrote has some heavyweights on his leadership team.
Yes, well, Todd Pritchard is serving his third term in the Iowa House. He represents a mostly rural and small town district in northeast Iowa. He lives in Charles City in Floyd County, but he grew up in Davenport, which is the third largest city in the state, in Scott County, which is the third largest county. And so his background is quite intriguing. He grew up in a working class area of Davenport in essentially a working poor family. He served in the Army for a number of years and did a tour in Iraq. And he came back and settled in Charles City with his wife and has had a law practice there, has been an assistant county attorney and a city attorney, and won a special election to the Iowa House a few years ago and really has impressed a lot of people there.
And so for this reveal, how did the representative announce that he is considering a gubernatorial campaign? So I guess he hasn't actually launched one. And what do you think of, if you will, this soft rollout that he's had so far?
Well, he's been quietly rolling it out for some time, I would say. He has been speaking to Democratic groups around the state. In February, I saw him speak at a Northwest Des Moines Democrats event. And then not long after that, he was at a Story County Democratic supper. So I don't think it's been a secret that he's been considering this. What he announced on Thursday, he essentially set out a press release that said, "I'm forming an exploratory committee." But I thought the stronger signal was his leadership team that he included in that press release. And it includes Sue Dvorsky, who's a past state chair of the Iowa Democratic Party, Bob Dvorsky, who is a state senator and has been serving for a long time, 20 years in the state, in the Iowa Senate, and Brad Anderson, who ran Barack Obama's reelection campaign here in 2012 and then was the 2014 Democratic nominee for Secretary of State. They're also on his leadership team. There's a woman who used to be the political director for Ask Me, which is the largest public employee union. So these are all people you would want to have on your side in a Democratic primary. And I think it was sending a signal that he's very seriously considering. He's might not be an official candidate yet, but this is about as close as you can come to being a candidate without making it official.
And so with such a powerhouse team around him without being official yet, as you just mentioned, we'll come back to maybe how Representative Pritchard fits in with some of the other possible contenders at this point. But let's get to those others. You wrote that two other Democrats have launched gubernatorial campaigns earlier this year, as well as a third who is widely expected to announce in the coming months. So who are these three?
Well, Rich Leopold was the first to become an official candidate. He announced the first week in January. He was the director of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources when Chet Culver was governor. And I should just say for disclosure that I've known Rich for a long time. I'm active in Iowa environmental circles, and I used to serve on the Iowa Environmental Council Board of Directors. And at the time I joined that board of that nonprofit, Rich Leopold was the executive director, although he left soon after that to become the head of the Iowa DNR. So he was quietly talking to people last year about running for governor, and he decided to just go ahead and take the plunge. And he raised his kids in a small town, Huxley. He knows a lot about state government from running a big agency, and he has been traveling. He's done quite a lot of visits around smaller towns and counties, as well as larger Democratic events, to try to get the word out. And his message, as well as Todd Pritchard's message, is that Democrats really need to do a better job of talking to people in smaller communities and in rural Iowa and explaining to them why the Democratic candidates would better represent their concerns. The second candidate to announce was in February, and that was John Niederbach. John also knows a tremendous amount about state government. He worked for a number of years for the Legislative Services Agency, and that's a nonpartisan group of staff who draft legislation for the Iowa House and Senate and do various kinds of analysis for state lawmakers. And then he worked in the Iowa Department of Human Services, which is one of the biggest state agencies, for a number of years. He also served a term on the Des Moines School Board, so he has a perspective on local government and local school issues. And he has been traveling around. He's done at least half a dozen events around the state in different counties, large and small, since he announced his campaign. The next candidate who is widely expected to enter the race is Andy McGuire. She is the immediate past state chair of the Iowa Democratic Party. And she was the running mate of Mike Bluhin, who ran for governor in 2006. He finished just a close second behind Chet Culver in that Democratic primary. But if Bluhin had won the primary, Andy McGuire would have been his lieutenant governor nominee. And she, in some ways, I'm surprised she hasn't announced already. But when I saw her in January at the Iowa Democratic Party State Central Committee, where they were electing a new leader, I asked her at one point during the day, when are you going to announce? And she just responded by joking about it, like, oh, do I look pregnant? You know, I'll let you know if I'm pregnant. And for those who don't know, Annie McGuire has 7 grown children. So she's not going to be announcing a pregnancy anytime soon. But she is supposedly talking to people about joining her leadership committee and helping her raise money. But there is no official word yet about when she might launch a campaign.
So out of the 4 names that we've mentioned so far, what do you think will likely be happening in the coming months concerning this 2018 gubernatorial race? And what do you think so far of like you just mentioned, when people have chosen to declare versus maybe waiting a little bit?
Well, it's interesting. I think a lot of people are in the race quite early. I mean, it's been common in the past for gubernatorial candidates to announce in the summer or early fall. I think Jack Hatch announced immediately after the 2013 legislative session ended. And Terry Branstad, when he got back into politics, he didn't announce until September of 2009, you know, before the election year. So I think one of the key issues is that Democrats are going to be under a lot of pressure to raise money. The Republican Party usually has more money anyway, but Kim Reynolds in particular has more than $1 million head start on the rest of the field. And so there's going to be some pressure not to leave it too late. I do expect more candidates to join the field. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up having 5 or 6 candidates. But I think the pressure to get in early and to make a strong statement is to try to start building that war chest, because Iowa is a pretty big state. It takes a lot to campaign and get your message out all over the state.
And so, you know, obviously, talking about Iowa here on the podcast, we've mentioned in the past, we've had a good conversation about Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds and how, unless there's some big legal decision out there, she is going to assume not only the role of the governor, but become the new governor. So she would be the incumbent governor running in the next election. That's kind of the one part of the trifecta of the GOP's control over the state now. You have the governorship and also the two houses of elected officials. So does any Democrat have a chance in 2018? And if so, who do you think maybe so far that we've seen would be that Democrat?
Well, first of all, I want to say regarding Kim Reynolds that it's not 100% certainty that she will be the Republican nominee. I expect that Cedar Rapids Mayor Ron Corbett will join the Republican field for governor. And certainly Kim Reynolds would be favored in a primary, but I think that Ron Corbett could have some powerful arguments to make, and he could possibly raise a lot of money and cause some trouble for her. I think the recent budget shortfall that Iowa's had creates an opening for him to say, look, when I was Speaker of the Iowa House in the 1990s, we had our fiscal affairs in order, and you've mismanaged the state. So I
wouldn't think he missed an opportunity to declare rather than play some music at that event he held.
Yes, in February, he had a big buildup saying that there was going to be a surprise at the end of his last condition of the city address as mayor of Cedar Rapids. But then instead of making a big campaign announcement, he played a rock and roll song. I think he has plenty of time to announce. I don't know. And I don't know for sure that he will run. That's just my hunch, is that he will get in this race. He is someone who has been able to raise money in the past. And we'll see what happens. And I would say it's very likely that Kim Reynolds will be the Republican nominee. But I just wanted to make clear that she may have a challenge on the Republican side as well. But getting back to your question, which is, do Democrats have a chance? I would say of the three parts of the Republican trifecta, Democrats have a better chance to win the governor's race than they do of taking back the majority in the Iowa House or the Senate. The Republicans were able to build pretty large majorities. They've got 59 of the 100 seats in the Iowa House right now. And it's not inconceivable that Democrats could take back 10 seats, but that would be a lot. A net gain of 10 seats, even in a midterm election, that would be a tall order. And in the Iowa Senate, the Republicans right now have 29 seats. They're very likely to have to pick up independent Senator David Johnson's seat in 2018, because he's an independent now, but he represents a very Republican area. So that would give them theoretically 30 seats. And for Democrats to have a net gain of 5 or 6 seats in the Iowa Senate would be pretty tough. So the governor's race, I mean, it's always difficult running against an incumbent, but it's certainly not out of reach for a Democrat. And especially if the national mood turns sour on Republicans.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I guess I'll put you on the spot. Who would you pick so far who's declared or at least might declare? Do you think anyone is kind of a standout?
Well, I think I want to see how the whole field shapes up first. I mean, I think that it is going to be important for the candidate to raise enough money to run a decent campaign. And so we'll see who can do that in the current field. And then I also feel that biography, I mean, we've run some candidates from Polk County in the past. Andy McGuire is a doctor from Des Moines. And I think that it might be, arguably, we might be better off running a candidate not from Polk County. So from that perspective, Todd Pritchard has an advantage because he has strong roots in Scott County and also strong roots in a rural small town area in the northeast part of the state. But let's see what happens, because as I said, Rich Leopold also has strong roots in small towns. And I think From running a statewide campaign, probably the person who might have the most challenges would be John Niederbach. Just we'll see how well he does raising money. On the other hand, I would say he was a very high profile Bernie Sanders supporter. And so if he's able to tap into the segment of Iowa Democrats who favored Bernie Sanders, who gave a lot of small donations to Bernie Sanders, you know, it's possible that he could raise a decent amount of money that way. And I should also point out that in that 2006 primary, which Chet Culver won, Ed Fallon ran a real shoestring campaign and didn't spend as much as Chet Culver and Mike Bluhin, but he finished a surprisingly strong third. He got about 26% of the vote. So in a field of 4 or 5 or 6 candidates, I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out.
Final thoughts here on the topic, Laura, and then also, you know, we've spoken a lot about Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds when it comes to, you know, becoming the governor and the legal aspect of that and whether or not that should happen. But what do you think about her as a candidate? Obviously, she's not Terry Branstad. Very big shoes to fill. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to say.
Well, I think she has some real weaknesses as a candidate, and we'll see. If I were advising Kim Reynolds, I'd tell her as soon as Terry Branstad ships off to China, she should take some very strong public move that sets herself apart from Branstad. And I would volunteer the Medicaid privatization. I think that if she did something like reverse the Medicaid privatization, which has been a real disaster for Iowa, that would communicate that she is not just a puppet for Terry Branstad or the people who are behind Terry Branstad. But I don't really expect her to do that. But that if she just continues defending all of the Branstad policies, I think it puts her in a weak position. Iowa's budget is very tight. The revenues are not where they need to be. Kim Reynolds has a convenient excuse, citing the farm economy and farm commodity prices. But I had a guest author, John Mueller, who used to be a revenue estimator for Iowa himself. He wrote a good guest piece for me a few days ago, demonstrating that really the farm economy doesn't have as much influence over the state budget as people think it does. And there are other factors that contributed to Iowa not being where we need to be on the budget. So I think that if Democrats can emphasize, you know, the harm that's been done by some of Branstad's policies like Medicaid privatization and the fiscal mismanagement of the budget, I think that those are some real weaknesses for Kim Reynolds. The advantage she's going to have is a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, you mentioned she's already has the purse kind of filled up at this point. She has quite a big leap on the other contenders who, one, as you mentioned, hasn't even declared yet.
Right. And she is, I'm sure she's going to raise a lot more money this year. She raised about $1 million last year, and I'm sure she'll raise more than that this year. If Ron Corbett does enter the race, she'll have to spend some of that money during the primary, though.
Exactly. Yeah. So still a lot of factors out there. I'm really interested in whether Mr. Cedar Rapids, the rock star, will throw his hat in. That's a really interesting move because, you know, this is such a unique time for the governorship in Iowa and also just a unique time for Iowa and the rest of the country in general. So, Laura, it's always great to speak with you. Laura Bellin, the founder of BleedingHeartland.com. And I'm sure we'll talk about this topic again in the future.
Thanks a lot, Chance.
I'm Chance Dorland, and you've been listening to the Des Moines FM podcast. You can subscribe in the iTunes store with Stitcher, Audio Boom, Overcast, or your favorite podcasting app. And as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, leave us a comment. Let us know your opinion on this or any other topic by recording a voicemail message on our website, DesMoinesFM.com. This episode is brought to you by Podcast Assist, offering voiceovers, audio editing and mastering, transcriptions and show notes, episode summaries, and even hosting a podcast on a topic important to you. Visit facebook.com/podcastassist for more info on their flat $30 per hour rate.